Hey, this is Lucky. The podcast you're about to listen to is part of the Professional Casual Network. To find more podcasts like this, please visit professionalcasual.com.
The Professional Casual Network has gear. If you're looking to get some sweet merch from Beards, Ears, and Skulls, Grim Podcast, A Perilous Adventure, Arachne, and Infinity Podcast, or a whole lot more, you can check out streamlabs.com/professionalcasualnetwork1/merch. Also, don't go to Built Bar anymore. They're not a sponsor and they're dead to us. So head over to monumenthobbies.com and use code professionalcasual at checkout for 5% off every single order you possibly, you know, like order for like paints and board games and stuff. Right? Thanks.
Hey, my electric casuals, and welcome to another episode of Beards, Ears, and Skulls, the best old world podcast on the internet. I'm Taylor, who's your personal grudge bearer, and with me is Dan.
Oh, Dan, I'm here.
There he is. You heard it here, folks. Dan is here. As always, before we get started, though, everybody, I want to send a huge yowie thank you to our beautiful and wonderful patrons who support us over on patreon.com/professionalcasual. These folks help us do what we do every day, keep the lights on, and keep Tim from eating my new match playbook, because I finally got one.
Huge
special thank you to Xpaxis and Rob, Iron Maze and Tau, Dagna and Bicon, Briar Mage and Cider Drinker, Kilt and Sparky, Random Guy and Cliff Jumper, Velis and the Pagan Prince, David and Handsome Andy, Brooks and Chris Dillard, and Cord. Those are our current big subbies over on patreon.com/professionalcasual. Thank you, folks. And then, hey, if you want to show your love for this show directly, you can sign up at the Electric Casuals tier. We've got Lou G, and that's Lou, L-U-G, not Lil.
Lou G.
Lou G. It's almost like Luigi. You're Luigi now. Tony M, Meerkat, Stefan, Rev Right Mad, Cliff, Elite Eight Showdown was canceled, Anthony, Manuel, Daniil Harris, Lil Willy, Carlos, and Nick Barron. Thank you to our Electric Casuals. Fantastic stuff. Dan. We did a lot of games playing Hobby Hobby. We did a lot. So speaking of Hobby Hobby, I actually put 20 Slayers together, as well as a Goblin Hewer.
I heard that was a great time that you had with that that all-metal Goblin Hewer.
The problem is I want another one. I just don't want to assemble it.
Yeah.
It was cool. It was fun. I was using it wrong, but it rolls buckets of dice.
How did you use it wrong?
I gave it a -1 for multiple shot, and it doesn't have the multiple shot special rule. Oh,
yeah. I thought you meant like you made decisions for it wrong, like you shot the wrong unit or something.
I mean, yeah, but it was funny. It's strength 4, AP 1, armor bane 1 hits, so it's not like, and it's blitz skill, you know, it's dwarf blitz skill. So it's blitz skill 3, so you're not hitting a lot, right? Which is
Slayer
awful.
Slayer ballistic skill.
Slayer ballistic. No, they're all like that.
I know. So, I'm just trying to make it a little better for you.
Right. And so, yeah, you know what? Let's just go into it. The reason I put a whole bunch of Slayers together and I put the Goblin Hewer together is because yesterday, at day of recording, Dan and I and a couple other people went to Breeder Dragon Games and we played a little just fun day of casual gaming, which, real quick, Brooks is actually doing one of those in Amesbury, Massachusetts, July 27th. From 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., just casual day of gaming. They're going to be trying out some of the new match play scenarios, which we're going to go over today, and the secondary objectives. Open to all experience levels. People are welcome to sign up on BCP, or could even join the PCN Discord and chat with Brooks about it there. So join our Discord, go over to BCP, and look for Brooks's event. I don't really know what it's called, but yeah, join our Discord. That's kind of the best way to chit-chat with the community.
Yeah.
So we had essentially the same thing this last Saturday, which was yesterday for us, and it was just four of us got together and we hung out and played some games. I had the absolute privilege of playing against Andy because he's the dopest dude ever, and unfortunately Dan had to play Alex, which I'm joking. Alex is an absolute treasure. but I brought 2,000 points of Slayers, so I had Ungrim. 2 units of 25 Slayers as core, because Ungrim allows you to take 0 to 1 per 1,000 points as core of Slayer units in a royal clan. And then they had some banners, some runic banners and stuff. I don't want to get too into it because we got a lot to go over today. And then I had 3 Doomseekers, and they were all tooled out, and then a Goblin Hewer. And I think that was it. So I had 1, 2, 3, 4 drops, including characters.
You only had Ungrim?
I just had
Ungrim. Characters?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. I didn't realize how overcosted the Slayers are.
Oh my gosh. Well, it was the Doomseekers, because each Doomseeker was like 200 points, and I had 3 of them.
True. Right? I guess that is a big chunk, but still, you only had 2 units of 25.
I can only take 2 units of Slayers in a Royal Clan with Ungrim in 2,000
points. I'm just saying, like, for how little your army was, it's amazing. I don't know. It's just crazy how little you got out of 2,000 points. Like, how few models? Because you had, 30 models? Not even? Or, sorry, 54 models?
50, yeah, including the Hewer, 55. 3, 4.
I forgot about the Hewer.
5, yeah, 55 models. Yep. And it was trash. It was absolute trash. I got my butt handed to me.
Andy's not perform well.
No, it didn't perform at all. Andy's a damn good player, first of all. And he's playing Orcs and Goblins, which he's been playing since like second edition, or even maybe earlier than that. And it was a horrible matchup for me. Danced around me. And it just, I got absolutely minced. It was a good time though. Andy's fantastic. I love the dude. But there's a lot of things that I would want to change in that list. But yeah, the reason that I got all those Slayers together was for that. And we just heard from the recent GW press release, whatever nonsense, that there is another book coming out that is going to have like a Slayer army in it.
Yeah.
And I'm super excited about it. So
that's really like, I wonder if it seems too soon, but I wonder if it's actually in response to people being like, why is there not a Slayer list in the Dwarf Arcane Journal?
Yeah.
Ungrim, it doesn't work. You can't do an all Slayer list. Like, you can, but it doesn't work well.
Right.
I wonder if it was actually in response to that, or typically the development time is much farther out, but like, if they're not developing new kits for it, that's something I feel like you could write up and play test relatively easily.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure.
Yeah, I'm super excited for that book, and I pat myself on the back for like calling it. We were talking in another Discord, actually Brooks in his Discord was asking like, what do people think they're going to show with this preview? And I'm like, we're going to get a campaign book that adds like different units for different armies and whatnot, like the Storm of Chaos book. And this sounds like that's what it's going to be.
I'm so into campaigns too.
Yeah.
Like I just, anything that is Storm of Magic-esque or Storm of Chaos-esque.
I forgot.
Blood in the Badlands.
Called.
Love stuff like that. Huge fan. I am a giant machine that blows air. Huge fan.
What? Oh. That's pity. The War of Cetra's Fury. That's what I forgot what it was called.
Bless you. So here's what I'm excited about. I'm excited about the fact this is all, I don't know if this is happening, folks. Do not listen to a word that I'm about to say. I'm excited about the fact that we're getting Longdrung and his Slayer Pirates.
Please,
that's going to be dope.
Please.
I'm excited that we're going to get a ship that comes with them, because that's going to be dope.
That floats through the air.
That floats through the air. That's also propelled by beer. Yeah. That you can put, and we're going to get, Malachi is suddenly going to be born. It's going to be great.
He's just a baby.
It's going to be great. I'm super excited about an all Slayer list. So I did tweak my list afterwards, because Andy and I sat down, and in a perfect world, I'd have like, you know, a unit of 28 Slayers, and then like little darts of like 10 to 12, and then little Slayer units of 5 or so, and then the Doomseeker scattered within and all that sort of stuff. But you can't do that.
You got no points.
Right. So, well, no, you just can't do it. In a Royal Clan, and when you take Ungrim, you can only take 2 units of Slayers at 2,000 points.
You can't take them as special or rare at all?
Nope.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That seems kind of brutal.
Yep. So in Royal Clan, you cannot take Slayers unless you take Ungrim. Yep. And then the Goblin Hewers are mercenaries, because they are, he doesn't add those. So it's really weird. It's a really weird setup. But anyways, what I didn't realize is that you can take a unit of Hammerers. And if Ungrim is your general, the Hammerers gain, Dan's going to love this, they gain Unbreakable. They essentially become slayers.
Whatever. I'm just not going to be in combat with them anyway. So,
oh man, I totally missed that. I was like, oh shoot, I should have taken a giant unit of hammerers or like a unit of 18 with shields, right? Because they'll have a 4-up save. And now you can just use the shields when you get charged, right?
Anyways, yeah.
But I don't care. They're unbreakable. I don't care if I use the shields or not.
Oh, duh.
You know?
Well, so anyways, a better save, I guess.
Ah, who cares? But yeah, that was totally...
Who cares if they die?
Who cares if they die? They're slayers. But that was a stupid amount of fun. There were some... The two big highlights that I loved is on my second turn, two of the Doomseekers charged a Mangler Squig. And one of them made it. The other one didn't. And the one that made it just... Right? I had that tattoo rune. I think it's Endless Battle, where every wound you cause, you get an additional attack.
Ooh.
Right? So I just minced this Mangler Squig and overran into his big old unit of orcs that had his level 4 shaman in it. And I was like, I am going to murder this thing. It has been killing me. Having a magic resistance 2 on my entire army was really nice.
Yeah.
Especially with the new magic spells or new magic rules. But I was like, this guy's dead. I'm going to murder him so hard. It's going to be awesome. And then on his turn, he was like, all right, so I'm going to put this fanatic out. That's right next, right next to this Doomseeker.
Here we go.
Right? He rolls 2d6. He rolls like an 8, goes right through the Doomseeker and just makes paste. Just makes paste at him. He rolls 5 hits, 5 wounds, thing's dead. Right?
Wait. Didn't Andy have another fanatic in that unit?
Oh, hang on. Not done yet. He had another fanatic in that unit. So that fanatic proceeds, the one that he popped down, because he went like sideways parallel to his deployment zone. That fanatic is now sitting behind his unit of black orcs. And he's like, this won't go bad at all. And he rolls on his turn for the random movement, goes straight through his unit of black orcs, pops into a unit of boar boy biggins, and kills like 4 each. It just murders them. And then the next time it goes to move, double twos. Kills itself. So then towards the end of the game, I've got a unit with Ungrim, and then and he's in a unit of like, there's 4 slayers left. He's just been murdering this unit, right? And he's like, hey, I have 1 fanatic left. Throws the fanatic out of the unit, rolls 2 threes, kills itself.
That's what you get.
Fanatic. I was like, oh my god, I love orcs and goblins so much. They're so stupid. So, 2 highlights of the games, obviously always going to be fanatics.
If you're playing them, that's what you're going to love.
So what'd you bring, Dan?
Well, I also actually did some hobbying. We finally got the big old desk over for our, we're calling it the office, where doing the recording. So, I don't sound like I'm on a potato phone anymore, because I'm in the basement, got our recording station set up mostly today. But we got a big desk in there for like hobby stuff. So I actually got to do some painting.
Heck yeah.
It's been weeks. So I knew with this day coming up, I wanted to try something different because I've been doing the Beastmen a bunch lately. And for some reason I was like, I want to play Skaven again. Now the infantry is better. I want to try an infantry heavy list. What's more infantry heavy than Skaven?
Yeah, for real, dude.
So I took like a 2000 point list I had, and I used the Renegade rules, which we need to talk with those guys, because they has to talk with us forever ago and scheduling's been crazy. So I used the Renegade list for it, which actually a lot of it's good, but in a way it hurt my list because I actually couldn't take the 3 Jazaels I was planning on taking.
Ooh, all right.
Because the Renegade list, they move Storm Vermin to special, and you can take 1 unit, I think, per 1,000 points in core if your general's a warlord.
Oh.
But since I used the Grey Seer as my general, I couldn't use the Storm Vermin in core at all. So I had to have more Clan Rats for core, which ate up the points I was going to use for Jazaels. But it was super fun. I had like a big block of 40 Clan Rats with spears, a block of 20 Clan Rats with hand weapon shield, 20 Storm Vermin with shields, and then 3 Rat Ogres with 2 Pack Masters. One was a Master Molder. I took them out of the list for now. They have been garbage for me. The Hellpit Abomination was awesome, and I had a Warp Lightning Cannon, and then the Poison Wind Globadiers were kind of MVP as well. They were
awesome. I am so glad when we did our Skaven episode that I talked you into those things. Because when we started them, you were like, they're trash and I hate them so much. And then I started reading the rules off and you were like, wait a minute, what? Wait a minute, what?
Wait, those two rules together are awesome. and then I had, I forget that. The Storm Vermin had a Doom Flayer, and then one of the units had a Doom Flayer, and I think it was the big unit of 40 had a Warp Fire Thrower, which was actually pretty awesome.
Yeah, until Andy mentioned something about it.
Well, he had to say how good it was doing, and then, of course, it blew up the next roll. I'm like, thanks, man. No. but I was playing against Alex with his Bretonians. He's a pretty new old world player, but he's a seasoned like miniature war game player. So he's got a pretty good idea of what's going on. He had a lot of stuff. I was kind of shocked at how much he had at 2000 points. Cause he had two units of Knights of the Realm. Mm-hmm. One was big with like 10 guys or something. Maybe even had three. I think he had three units. I think two were 6-man units and one was like 10. And he had a general, his general was only a paladin though. He didn't go for the expensive Duke or Baron. Then he had a level 4 damsel. What else was there? He had a block of like 20 peasants with halberds. He had like unit of 16 archers, and a trebuchet. And then he had a unit of like 6 ground knights.
A tree bucket.
Oh, and two units of 3 Pegasus knights.
Jeez.
Yeah.
2000 points. Like,
you're still putting stuff on the table?
Dude, I had 5 drops, 4 drops.
You guys are criminally overpriced.
Yeah, apparently.
And let's see, he prayed, so I went first, of course. Oh, and we for both of these games, we tried out the new scenarios from the Match Play book, which was a big deal. And we got the one with the diagonal deployment that I already forgot what it's called.
I'm pretty excited about that one. I actually would really like to give that one a shot.
Drawn battle lines. And normally I'm like, ugh, diagonal deployment, such a pain to measure out. But I can't remember if we've seen this before, but I feel like they finally figured it out, where you just measure from one of your corners to the middle of the table on the other side.
Yep.
Because they're 24 inches apart.
It makes so much sense.
Yeah, it was. So we just set our tape measures down and we were good to go. It was really easy. This also had the strategic locations 3 and Dominion secondary objectives. We decided not to do baggage trains because neither of us had any models for that yet.
Sure. Yeah.
But it was like, he was like, okay, what's all this? And I was like, all right, let's go through it together because I need to remind myself. And obviously you haven't played this before. But it was pretty cool. My highlights were the Hellpit Abomination just bumbling into the Grail Knights. Because it has random movement, the Grail Knights couldn't countercharge.
Yeah, buddy.
They couldn't like flee, which they wouldn't have anyway. But I got the charge into them and I did Avalanche of Flesh. So I placed the small template on them and got a bunch of hits and killed like 2 or 3 of them. It was crazy. With stomps. And then he fell back in good order. And I'm like, well, I'm going to follow up.
Yeah.
And I think at that point he had the next round, I took him down to just 1 left and he fled. And then the next turn, my Hellpit Abomination did random movement into him and he was dead. Because he can't flee because it's not a charge.
Yep.
So the Hellpit ate a unit of 5 or 6 Grail Knights. And then we only got to do like 4 turns because he had to get out of there. And then eventually it got into the trebuchet and ate that too.
But Dan, it's any called wound. A tree bucket.
The Hellpit didn't take any wounds because I didn't charge the Grail Knights. They never got to use their lances or anything. So they're just strength 4. And I'm like, I'm toughness 6. You can't hurt me. And he didn't.
Turns out he can't hurt him.
It was pretty great. The Poison Wind Globadiers were awesome as well with their move and shoot.
Being able to
march 10 inches and then they have a range of 9. I thought it was 6. My first shot, Alex was like, what? Because they lob their globes and every hit becomes D3 hits.
Yeah, man.
Because they used to do like templates and just to simplify it a little bit. So the first round of shots, I think I got like 15 hits or something. I rolled crazy good on all the D3s.
That's so good, dude.
And killed like three knights because the it's only strength two, but it always wounds on sixes and they don't get any armor. So all he had was a six up ward save because the strength's so low, he doesn't really get the lady, he doesn't get the bonus to the lady save.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Which was nice.
It needs to be what, strength five?
Strength five or more, it becomes a five up save, yeah. Which actually worked out really well. One of the shots with the warp lightning cannon hit a unit, hit three guys in a unit of Knights of the Realm, mm-hmm. and I rolled strength two, but I still killed like three of them, and he only got the six up save against that, or I think it was a six up because it's minus three armor, but it was like zap, but
zap.
In the end of that one, he did a ton of damage. I did a lot of damage to him, but he had a couple units down to like one or two guys left.
Oh, sure.
So like just not getting full points for them. I think I got full points for the Grail Knights and the Trebuchet, and that was it. The Tree Bucket. I think Thank everything you. Else I had killed some or most of. Like the general with the unit of Knights of the Realm, the Knights I got down to one.
Ah.
Out of the unit of 10, so that hurt.
That's so frustrating.
And he had killed like he killed a lot. He killed the stupid rat ogres, frenzied, failed their charge. I forgot to have warband, so they didn't. I forgot to reroll it, and then they got charged. They actually took a couple rounds to kill, but like they just don't do damage back because they don't have any AP. They have armor bane 2,
sure.
Mm-hmm. But now that frenzy sucks. It's like, oh, I got charged, so. Frenzy only hurt me again.
I guess I'm screwed. Right.
Yeah. Super frustrating. So I'm going to try taking a break from Rattlegers for a little while just because, like, yeah, they're strength five, but again, there's no AP on their weapons because they're just hand weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And they're armor bane too. So you got to roll sixes. So it's like, ugh. I don't know. I'm going to try it instead of them, Jazales and there's something else. I think I added another chieftain. Just for more punch in one of the units, just to screw the combat chieftain. forgot at one point, a big deciding factor was my unit of Storm Vermin had a chieftain BSB in it, and he cast Curse of Cowardly Flight on them, mm-hmm. and I failed it twice. I rolled a 9 and a 10 for their leadership, and then they fled like a full 13 inches or something, and then later... We were talking about like what was going on, and Andy was because your guys' game was over that you guys were kind of watching. He's like, "Wait a minute, they're not fleeing, right? Because they were over, you know, half strength." And I was like, "Oh my god, I totally forgot. They should have fallen back in good order, not fled, idiot." So that could have been a big thing, but it was like, well, you know, that was my mistake. I totally goofed there.
Yeah, man, live and you learn.
Nerfed them, but it was a great time. Doom Flayers were awesome. I got the Doom Flayers done and the Hell Pit Abomination like a good chunk of the way there.
Yeah, dude, it looks great.
Thanks. But he, you know, he's on his way. So it was nice to actually get some painting done for like an event. It was like I have motivation to get these things
right
now that absolutely. I'm a little settled in the house.
Yeah.
Finally.
I mean, more than just a bed. Right.
Right. So I think next up is going to be finish the Hell Pit Abomination, of course, and the Poison Wind Globes deserve paint on them now.
But yeah.
And proper base sizes. Cause
and the minis are just so good, too. Bases. Minis are just so good, you know?
Yeah, it's
you got
funny
the newer ones, right?
My units have the old metal ones, which are just these bulky dudes. They're just holding a globe up and a sword in the other hand. They look so dumb.
Yep.
And the new ones are awesome and crazy dynamic. So they're and right now the new ones are on 25 millimeter bases and primed Wraith Bone. The old ones are on old slotted 20 millimeter bases and primed prime brown. So it looks like two different units. So I'm just gonna print like base adapters for each because they're skirmishers. So I'm just gonna print like five base adapters. I'd printed some before, but I don't know where they went in the move. They're lost.
are they diagonal slots or are they straight slots?
They're on 20, so they're straight. I don't know if 20 millimeter bases ever had slotted.
I might have some for you.
Slotted 25s?
Yeah.
Oh wait, I think I gave you a whole ton.
Yeah, either that or some of them are diagonal. I might have some straights. We'll see. Yeah. I'll take a look and I'll let you know.
Yeah, because I'll take a look for the, I know I have some of like just the, you put the 20 millimeter base in this one little 25 millimeter adapter would be fine for them. Then I can just glue them on.
Sure, fair enough.
Oh, dog's barking. I bet.
Hi, dog.
Hi, dogs. But no, our game, it was great. In the end, with the mistake with the BSB and whatnot, he ended up being ahead by about 200 points. We counted up Dominion, or Domination, and the strategic points, which we actually tied on. We both scored 6 points from those, nice. Which is like 180 points. He's got 30 points per turn, yes. Which is weird. I'm not a huge fan of counting it throughout the game because like nothing else for victory points you do throughout the game. Everything else is just at the end.
Yeah, so I'm not going to lie. Andy and I ignored that. We didn't score the secondary objectives at all.
The last time I played Andy, we did the strategic locations as well, and we kind of just ignored them. At one point, the token we were using got stuck to the bottom of his unit of orcs, and they just carried it with them for like 2 turns.
That's so perfect.
So I was like, where's this even go? And he's like, I don't know.
That's so perfect.
We got it with him. But yeah, so a big part of that game day was to try out these new scenarios. So we just kind of rolled for it, and I'm loving it. I like.
Oh yeah.
I love the secondary objectives. I think that adds a whole new dynamic to the game. So it's not just let's crash into each other and see who rolls better to kill each other. Actually holding objectives on the table. I know a lot of people are like, this shouldn't be an objective-based game because you have these big blocks of models and blah, blah, blah. But I think it does add an extra dynamic to it.
Yeah. The thing that, excuse me, the thing that Andy and I were talking about with, oh my gosh, I completely lost my train of thought.
Yeah, you did. You just holy blanked moly. Out for us. I saw
completely
it.
Blanked
left
out.
Your eyes.
Dude, my eyes like dilated. That was crazy. Oh yeah, the thing that Andy and I were talking about whether you like it or not, whether you're a fan of the secondary objectives or not, it shows this match play guide that we'll start getting into here in just a second. It shows that GW cares about this game.
Yes,
you know what I mean, and that he's like when he was thinking about picking up stuff for Old World, he was like, I'll give it, you know, like a year or so before I really commit and see if GW cares, right? And he's like, now that they have not only all these different arcane journals, completely new armies, but now this match play guide, which actually goes over a lot of the things that the community was really asking for. He's like, I'm completely in it again. Yeah. So it's fantastic. Whether you like the changes again or not, it really shows GW's commitment to making this game. It's a main game. It's a main GW game, right?
Yeah, they kind of have like the big four now with 40K, Horus Heresy, Old World, and AOS.
Yep.
And then they have all like the, you know, side games like Underworlds and Kill Team and Necromunda and Blood Bowl, Warcry.
Warcry, right?
I think that's still the thing.
I don't know. I hear it's good.
I played it twice when it first came out, and there were a lot of some of the core mechanics I really liked, but it was a typical GW game where it was like, wow, this is super unbalanced.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, you have a big model with 20 wounds? I lost.
And, hey, something that's really nice about these, you know, new FAQ changes and all that sort of stuff is they're getting away from that with specifically Old World, which is fantastic, right? You have that huge gribbly monster. Like, you don't just automatically win now.
The buff to infantry, it seems so minimal at first, but it's big.
It's huge, dude. It's absolutely huge.
I had a unit of 40 clan rats, 8 wide, because that's how my boomatrays are at the moment.
Yep.
With spears, get charged by unit of Knights of the Realm. And the knights bounced off. I think I killed 3 knights because I had so many attacks back because I got to fight in 3 ranks with my spears.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And the new, you have to be within your movement characteristic to make supporting attacks actually mattered. 3 of my rats were too far away.
Yep.
Because the knights hit me way on one side because that's as much as they could maximize because the hell pit was kind of in their way.
Sure.
So three of the dudes just, they weren't within 5 inches of the guys. And I was like, that's kind of awesome. Like, I like that it limited it. And it's like, I don't think I need to go 8 wide anymore.
Well, that's the thing is, it, you know, the line hammer piece is just not nearly as terrible, right?
Yeah.
It also affected my game, if you can imagine, that having movement 3 would make things go out of combat.
No, what?
Which is really terrible for slayers, by the way.
What? How?
You know, it's just, it's really strange how that works. But I, you know, I have a way around it with carts. But so my thing was, I was trying to go super thematic, right, and just take slayers. But yeah, I'll probably just model things as slayers at this point. Not everything, but some things I'll just model as slayers, right?
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll pick it up. Anyways.
But yeah, so with the match play stuff, the secondaries objectives, I think, really mix it up. I'd love to try a baggage train game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
For sure. It sounds really cool. You have a miniature diorama on a 60 by 100 base. So mm-hmm. It's like a monster base that represents something that your army is trying to move, right? So the most common ones we've seen are like a dude on like with like a wagon full of supplies for the army, or dwarf when using the pony cart.
Yep.
Is super common.
Naturally.
But I mean, a lot of people I've seen on Facebook talking about making one for each of their armies, which sounds like a super fun hobby project. Like imagine making, you know, an ogre baggage train.
Yeah, man. That's so cool.
I think it'd be a great way to use.
It's just Greasy's Gold Tooth.
Use bits.
It's just Greasy's Gold Tooth. That's their baggage train. Oh, that's so stupid. I'm sorry. But no, what's that?
Expensive baggage train model.
Right. What's that? That big old stupid Empire chariot thing where it's like a square that has the four dudes in the back of it.
Oh, the war wagon.
Yeah. Just take that. Don't put the dudes in the back. And there's your baggage train. Right.
Again, very expensive baggage train.
Right. I mean, it's Warhammer, man. one of the Cathayan blimps. That's your baggage train.
Oh, my God.
$160 baggage train.
But no, that one sounds really cool. So you place a baggage train, are placed after the battlefield has been set up, but before deployment. You place it within your deployment zone at least 3 inches away from any battlefield edge. So you can't put it right up against the back edge. Mm-hmm. Once it's placed, it doesn't move. So the idea is that they're transporting this baggage train with the army, and then the battle starts, and they're like, whoa, you got to wait for us to get these guys out of the way.
Yep. Yep.
And then you can continue on. And you control it like other objectives. Within 6 inches, you have to have a unit strength of 10 or more that's mm-hmm. not fleeing and not stupid, you know, not succumbed to stupidity.
That's a big one.
To control the baggage train. You can also destroy your opponent's baggage train. Unit with unit strength 5 or more can attempt to destroy it by moving into base contact with it during the remaining move subphase. You don't charge them, which is really interesting. You just move into contact.
Sure.
Once the unit is in base contact, it begins the process of destroying it, shattering wagon wheels, sending camp attendants fleeing into the hills and putting supplies to the torch. While unit is in base contact with the enemy's baggage train, it cannot shoot and can only cast spells with a range of combat or self. If at the beginning of their next start of turn phase, the unit is still in base contact with the baggage train, has a unit strength of 5 or more, and is not engaged in combat and is not fleeing, the baggage train is destroyed and removed from the battlefield.
Dope.
So you gotta contact it on your turn and stay there until the start of your next turn without getting charged. I guess you could potentially kill something that charges you and still destroy the baggage train.
Yeah. Yep.
You just
or
can't
have them bounce off. Combat. Yep.
Yeah. Have it bounce off. And then for each baggage train a player controls at the end of the battle, the player wins a bonus of 100 victory points. But if you destroy your opponent's baggage train, you win 250 victory points.
And this is so dope. So essentially where you place them is you place your baggage train on the battlefield. So it's wholly within their deployment zone and at least 3 inches away from a battlefield edge. So it's anywhere in your deployment zone. And depending on the scenario, that could be massive.
Yeah.
This what's really nice about this is let's say you're going up against what's her name? Friedal?
Who's Fried the ambush chain maker?
Yeah, who's the ambusher lady?
Yeah.
Right? Or like the ambushing beastman. You really got to think about this. Like, ah, crap, if I put it too close to the edge of the battlefield, like, I'm just going to have a unit of 10 centigors up my butt through my baggage train, right?
Yeah, so I honestly, I feel like the baggage train really improves the stock of ambushers.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Really, I mean, I think all these secondary objectives do, yes. Which is great because we've been making fun of ambushers for, you know, a year years. And a half.
25 years. So 25 years. I think specifically the baggage train and the strategic locations 3 and 4 really help with ambushers because usually yes. Ambushers are like, I'm just going to put them behind my opponent's deployment zone. It's usually every time you ambush, right? But now with the secondary objectives, the strategic locations on the sides
mm-hmm.
in 3 and 4, like you actually have a reason to put them over there. You know, this makes me want to play the minor list for dwarves.
Yeah,
absolutely. So the problem is I don't own any. So, hey, if anybody's got any miners, send them my way.
dwarf miners. West Oniana, New York. 13861.
Dwarf MINERS, please.
So these strategic locations, these secondary objectives, you can just add to whatever scenario you want, or the 6 new scenarios in the book that we just use as like roll 1 through 6. Which,
yep.
They all say like what secondary they should use and what are optional.
Yeah.
I think they all use the secondary. The strategic locations, and there's either 2, 3, or 4. You place a token on the battlefield. It should be a 40 millimeter round base, which I'm realizing now that we've never used one that size.
Nope.
That's okay. Now we'll remember. And they're just a marker on the table, right? You can't charge them. You can't do anything to them. They're just kind of there. But not really.
Yeah.
And if there's 2, you place them basically, they would, for most scenarios, they're going to be like right along that deployment line. They're halfway between the center of the board and the long table edge.
Yep.
You don't actually give measurements. They just show that it's halfway. If there's 3, they're all along the middle line between the long edges at that halfway line. One's dead center, and then the other 2 are on a typical table be 18 inches away from the center on either side. So they're just in a line across the middle. And then 4, they're like in a diamond. I think they're the same as 2. Actually, it's just 3, and it's 2 and 3 put together. Just remove the middle one.
Yep, exactly that. Yeah. And so that's the one that we played. That's the one Andy and I played. We played Encirclement, which was a terrible deployment thing for me, who having 4 drops. And the scenario.
Number 6. Okay. Oh, so that's like an auto refused flank.
Yes. So this scenario must include the strategic location 4. And we did not include the baggage train or the special features. So we played with that. And I had some Mario mushroom tokens, which I friggin' love.
So good.
They're so good. And it was perfect because, you know, playing orcs. And we ignored them the whole game. Like, I owned my objective probably, and he owned his objective probably the whole game, and we just ignore them. But the strategic locations are a little bit different to control them. So at the end of each turn, an objective marker can be controlled by a single core unit that's within 6 inches of it. That has a unit strength of 10 or more. It's not fleeing. It's not stupid.
Oh, I should have reread that because we definitely did that wrong in my game because it was like, oh, my warp lightning cannon is nearby. I can control that. It's not core or unit strength 10.
Nope. So it needs to be a core unit at unit strength 10 or more, which is the same for a special feature. Needs to be a core unit strength 10 or more, right? Not the same for the baggage, though. The baggage train is just anybody, which is interesting. So if 2 or more eligible units, closest unit controls it. If they're equally as close, a higher unit strength, blah, 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 all that sort of stuff, right? And then this is the weird one. So for each objective marker a player controls at the end of each player's turn, not your turn, each player's turn, they get...
We did that wrong, too.
Yep, they get 30 VPs. So Andy and I put them down, and we were like, haha, this is cute, and then we ignore them for the rest of the game. Just because it's kind of a pain in the ass because you need a piece of paper there with you.
Yeah, I really don't like tracking it throughout the game.
Sure, I agree.
I'd rather they just be worth like 50 points each at the end of the game or something. I don't know. There's nothing else in this game that you track throughout the game. So it's super easy to forget, like, obviously until you get into the habit. Because, like, I'm sure we're going to be playing with these regularly going forward.
Oh, yeah, for a very long time. Yep.
So now it's just going to be getting into the habit. Hopefully things like Old World Builder will include something like that.
I'm literally like checking
their game view
to see if they have that.
See it before.
What's really nice about games like MCP, where you score throughout the game. Yeah, there's something in here for scenario points. So you could put it in scenario points in game view. Yeah, interesting. So something in a game like MCP is you have a board where you track at the end of each individual round everyone's VPs, right? That's part of the game.
And it's built into the game from the beginning in the starter box.
Correct.
So, like,
and this adds this a year and a half in. You know what I mean? Where it's like you don't have that board. You don't have a special thing set up. I mean, it adds, you know, there's an option now for people who do like MDF printing and all that sort of stuff to make these trackers, which is really cool. But
yeah,
It's interesting. And I would like to get more games in using the strategic locations. Obviously, the baggage train sounds dope. And there's two other ones. One that we've had before, it's special features, right? Represents an important landmark. Your Herdstone is a special feature, right?
It's a special, special feature.
It's an extremely special feature. But,
special.
Controlling it is a significant achievement. End of the battle, you get 200 VPs. Like, oh, okay. Boom. Okay, right? So it's, again, I think the strategic locations are pretty much the only ones that you get at the end of your turn.
Yeah, that's why it's so weird.
Yep. It's because I'm looking at Domination as well, because I haven't read these yet. And Dominations is just no breathing, first of all, is controlling quarters of the battlefield, right? So you draw your battlefield into four equal quarters. Drawing four imaginary lines, blah, 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 blah. Control of each quarter of the battlefield is determined at the end of the game. The players add the unit strength of each of their models completely within each quarter, not counting fleeing. And this is models. This is not units. Unit strength of each of their models, right? The player that has the highest unit strength within a quarter controls it. For each quarter, you get 100 VPs at the end of the game. So if the unit strength of the models controlling a quarter is more than twice that of the enemy, they also get an extra 50 VPs. If a player controls a quarter uncontested from their opponent, they control an additional 100 VPs. So if you have a quarter and nobody else is in, you get 200 VPs for that quarter. It's pretty dope.
200. Yeah, so at the end of our game, we each had one quarter that we controlled that was uncontested, and then the others were just contested, I think.
Sure, yep.
I don't think we totally counted up unit strength and whatnot, because I think at that point Alex had to go anyway. But
yeah,
that's one of those that I like. That, you know, table quarters used to always be a thing, so I'm really glad it's back.
Yeah, I remember that.
And all these other ways to get victory points between strategic locations and domination and baggage trains and all that goes into the new way to determine whether, you know, what level of victory you might have.
Oh, yeah.
Because one of the big things there is that a draw at 2,000 points is now you have to have a difference of over 300 points to get a minor victory.
Yeah.
Which before this book seems like a lot, because like a draw before was like 100 points, right?
Yep.
So 300 is like, wow, that's kind of a lot you got to win by. But like,
that's two table quarters that you have double your opponent.
Yeah. So that's built in, assuming you're using these secondary objectives to score more points. There's also secret objectives we didn't use the other day, but I'd like to do this in the future. I want to get like some kind of cards for this.
Yes.
These sound really, really cool. It's kind of like what we used to have way back in, like, I can't remember, a previous edition of 40K, where you had like, you draw like those mission cards every turn. That was like, okay, I got to try to do this turn while doing the whole, you know, the main mission, I thought was really cool. Yep. So these secret objectives are completely optional, of course. It says twist that that not all secret objectives are achievable by every army or in every game, and that with each passing round, the players must choose a single objective from a diminishing pool. So when you write your muster list, when you create your... So say we're going to... let's say it's a tournament that's using these.
Yep.
When you write your army list for the event, you choose at
six
least
of them.
Six of the secret objectives.
No, there you must choose. Have to use six.
Must choose and the list. I thought I said at least.
Yep.
And list six of the 12 objectives. At the start of each game, you choose one of your secret objectives and make a note of it on a piece of paper, which should then be placed face down at the edge of the battlefield and in sight of the opponent. So, like, if you have cards, you would, you know, pull one card at random, put it face down.
Yep.
At the end of the game, when calculating victory points, both players reveal their secret objective. If either has achieved their objective, they win VP bonus as stated in the secret objective's description. After each round, when submitting results to scorekeeper, each player must also record which secret objective they chose for that round and whether they were successful. Once the secret objective has been selected, it cannot be selected again for the remainder of the event. So you start with six, and then second game you'll have five, third game you'll have four, so yep. on. And these are really cool. So interesting that it's even secret to you.
Yeah.
Right? You must choose one of your secret objectives and make a note of it.
Okay, no, you know which one it is. Yeah. Yep.
You do know what it is. I thought it was secret to both people. I was like, wow, no. Double blind. Okay.
No. And they're crazy. Some of these are nuts, dude. Like,
you want to go over the first VPs? Page of them?
Yeah. Let me tilt my head a little bit. So assassination is the first one. You need to kill all of your opponent's characters.
Oof. No all thanks. Of
them. Yep. So any characters that have fled off the battlefield or that are fleeing at the end of the battle count towards fulfilling this objective, right? And if you
if
get it...
fleeing, that makes a little bit easier.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. And if you get this, it's a bonus 150 VPs. That's a ton.
That's a lot of points.
Yeah. That's halfway to a major victory.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's a big one.
Magical Dominions, the next one. You must successfully cast three spells during a single turn without having them dispelled by your opponent and without suffering a miscast during the same turn. Easily doable. 75 points. Easily doable.
I don't think it's easily doable with the FAQ change.
Oh, yeah, with the changes? Yeah, that's totally fair. No, I don't know.
There's so much more difficult to get spells off now.
There's so many different ways to get a plus one to it, though. Right.
Yeah, that's one I would think about taking in particular lists, right?
Sure.
Skaven with multiple wizards, maybe something like that. But I think that's a tough one. But 75 points just for doing something you're gonna do anyway, casting spells. Okay.
Yeah, that sounds pretty dope.
Not bad.
This next one is my absolute favorite, Duel of Kings. To fulfill this objective, you must kill your opponent's general in a challenge. If you do, you get a whopping 200 VPs.
Which that's is nuts incredible. Because you also get 100 for killing the general. So now that's 300 points from that model. Plus whatever points they cost, probably a few hundred.
Right. So, hey, there's your major victory.
Right. You could, I mean, just killing the general, you could, depending on what army you're playing, like that could be 600-700 points with this objective.
Easily.
That's nuts.
Calming of the Winds, you fulfill this objective each time you dispel one of your opponent's spells with a faded dispel. Each time you fill this objective, you win a bonus of 50 VPs. This one's obnoxious because you have to remember to check it, do it during the game.
True, yeah, and it's only with faded, so like...
Eh.
But even if you're down to, like, if you're out of range or your wizard's dead later in the game and you happen to get a faded dispel, it's like, sweet, I just got 50 victory points.
It's so hard to dispel with faded, though. It's so hard. But yeah.
Again, not as hard as it was, though.
I don't know. Listen, I use a lot of fadeds just because, you know, dwarves. So Beast Hunter, to fulfill this objective, you must kill all units in your opponent's army whose troop type is monster. Enemy units whose troop type is monster that have fled or are fleeing, fulfill this, and you get an extra 100 VPs. On top of killing the VPs for the monster.
So that one is either not that bad or really hard to do because, like, the monster could be a Chaos Lord on a Chaos Dragon or an Ogre Tyrant on a Stone Horn.
Oh, those are easy to kill, Dan.
Yeah, okay. or it might like my game yesterday, all I had was the Hellpit Abomination as a monster. That's not that bad.
No.
So that's a big one up to chance. But 100 VPs, again, for something you're going to do anyway, you want to kill those monsters, obviously.
Right. Wizard's Bane is the next, and to do this, it's kind of the flip side of the Magical Dominion. Successfully dispel three of your opponent's spells in a single turn without being outclassed in the art during the same turn. You get an extra 75 VP.
I don't like that one. The chance of dispelling three
you
times.
You don't play dwarves, Dan. You don't play dwarves. I can have three dispel scrolls and just get this. Bing, bing, bing.
Successfully dispel three. Yeah, it doesn't say you have to like roll for it or anything.
Nope. I can just do that.
That's just the bonus 75 BPs for you.
For being a dwarf.
Unless they're like, oh, he's dispelled two with dispel scrolls this turn that he didn't really need to. I wonder if he has that secret objective. I'm not going to cast any more spells.
Right. Yeah, but then that causes like thinking, and I'm not good at that.
Well, then they're not casting the spells, and that's good for you anyway.
That's true. All right, why don't you hit us with the last six?
The second page of them, which is actually the last page of the book, the first one here is Hold the Line! To fulfill this objective, you must have two of your units, each with the unit strength 10 or more, not counting units that are fleeing or succumb to stupidity, within your opponent's deployment zone at the end of the battle. If you fulfill this objective, you win a bonus 75 VPs. So another boost to ambushers.
Yeah, dude, for real. For real.
Okay, I'm starting to think more ambushing lists might not be terrible.
Here's a way to go.
It's a good one for Taylor. Overwhelming firepower. To fulfill this objective, you must destroy an enemy unit in the shooting phase that began the phase with a unit strength of 10 or more.
I don't know why you would say this is good for me. I only shoot at Blitz Skill 3.
For 75 VPs, but you could, that you know, one turn, you're like, okay, I'm going to focus fire just to make sure I get this bonus 75 VP.
And that unit's dead?
Yeah.
You know?
You know, you got cannons and iron drake guns. I forget what they're called. Drake guns? Are they just drake guns?
Yeah.
Troll hammer torpedoes. I'm going to shoot all of this unit because they had a unit strength of 15 at the start, and now they're dead.
And now they're dead.
Now they're dead. And again, I like the ones that give you bonus for something you're going to do anyway.
Yep.
You know, trying to kill the opponent.
Oh my God. Here's another ambusher one.
Cut off their retreat. To fulfill this objective, you must have one of your units with a unit strength of 15 or more. It's not fleeing or stupid. Within 6 inches of the longest edge of the battlefield within your opponent's deployment zone at the end of the battle, 75 VPs. So they got to be not just in the deployment zone, but like, they've really pushed far into the deployment zone, or ambushers that showed up turn 5.
Right.
Could you imagine? I got my 20 gore. Here we go. 75 VPs for me.
That's hilarious.
It's so good. I like how this is actually making ambushers better. Fire the artillery. To fulfill this objective, you must cause an enemy to fail a panic test and flee as a result of being shot at by a unit whose troop type is War Machine.
What I like about this one, and I'm double checking this right now, is I think anytime, specifically just for dwarves, anytime any unit takes at least one casualty from a fire thrower,
they
have to take a panic test. So that's pretty dope. And fire throwers are neat. It's just a template, which sucks, right? So I'm just checking that real quick.
The biggest issue here is
a flame cannon
that it says flee.
What do you mean?
Does fallback in good order count as a flee?
Do fire throwers make things fall back in good order?
I don't know. That just makes them take a panic test, right?
Well, panic test, yeah. That doesn't mean fall back in good order.
Sure does, if your unit strength is high enough.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay.
Or your percentage of your unit is high enough, I mean. Because that was something that we came across yesterday. My warp fire thrower killed one peasant, and then he failed the roll and fled. And again, they should have fell back in good order, because it just says they make a panic test as if they had suffered too many casualties, right? Here we go. Make panic test. During a single shooting phase, 25%. What happens to a unit that fails a panic test will depend on how many casualties it suffered. A unit that has suffered only a few will fall back in good order. So if the unit still contains more than half of the models that contain the start of the battle, it will fall back in good order.
Gotcha.
If it's less, then it will flee. So dang. To me, it sounds like this fire the artillery, it says fail a panic test and flee.
Yep. Yeah. So they have to be pretty weak, weakened, under 50% at this point.
So dang. That one, that's not awful, depending on what your opponents are. Like, if they have a relatively small unit to begin with, you know, especially something a little bit later in the game, maybe your organ gun finally, you know, takes this unit down a bit and then they flee. I mean, it's 100 VPs. It's great if it works.
Yeah.
If it's, if it would just fail a panic test, that might just be too easy for 100 points.
No, I agree. I agree. And no, the fire throwers, I don't think just auto cause panic anymore.
Oh, really? They used to.
I don't think they do. I don't see it anymore.
Fire's scary, though.
Right? Dude, fire's so scary. Could you imagine, like, dwarven hot fire oil being thrown at you from 400 feet away?
I don't know. I'm going to go to the next objective. I don't think about that. Captured colors is a good one. You fulfill this objective by capturing enemy standards as trophies of war. If you capture two enemy standards, it's a bonus 50 on top of the points you get for the banners. I think it's 25 each.
I think so.
If you get three, it's a bonus of 100. And if you get four or more, it's a bonus of 150. So they kind of ramp up in their value as you get more of them, which is nice.
I like that one a lot. I think it's fun. I don't know how great it is, but I think it's fun. Capturing banners is always fun to me.
That's one of the six. I would take this every time.
Yeah.
Because you know there's going to be banners on the table. You've got a chance to collect them because you'll have to get two. But how many armies don't have at least two battle standards in their list?
Yeah, standards in their list. Yeah, for sure.
And the last one, Bounty Hunter. To fulfill this objective, you must kill the most expensive unit in your opponent's army. Units that have fled off the battlefield or fleeing at the end of the battle count towards fulfilling this objective, and it's 75 VPs. That, again, that could be really tough because in some armies, that's going to be, you know, a 500-point character.
Sure, yeah, 485-point Keeper of Secrets, right?
Right, because if you're using the new Grand Melee and Combined Arms rules, they can't have, at 2,000 points, they can't have a character, they can't have a unit that's more than 500 points anyway.
Yep.
Yeah, 500-point unit's terrifying, obviously.
Well, that's the thing is, you know, a block of hammerers, right? You got to kill that whole friggin' unit. Or your Phoenix Guard now, which are actually really good.
Ooh, yeah. I can't wait to try Phoenix Guard in
the
new rules. I'm so excited for them.
I can absolutely wait for that. That sounds awesome.
I got more that I bought from Ben last year. I need to get painted up so I can have like 25 or something.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
It hurts me.
Yeah. So I love these secret objectives. I need to get some kind of cards because I don't like having them just in the book and like a list written down. Mm-hmm. No thanks.
No, I agree.
Again, if it was something I could just click in like Old World Builder, that would be amazing. I wouldn't be surprised if eventually they add that to it. Obviously that's asking a lot right now, but I could absolutely see that as part of your army, just like, all right, I'm going to choose these objectives.
Yep.
Blah, blah, blah. Super cool.
Yeah. And real quick, we're only an hour in. So we're, you know, it's like real early in the episode. I just wanted to go over what we're not going to go over today in the match play guide. We're really not going to touch on the organizing the event piece or like the dual event or any of the organizing stuff. If you guys want to. Yeah, if you want to hear more about that, join our Discord and we'll chit-chat with you in the Discord about that. It's not something that we wanted to throw in the episode. But I think we only have two other things that we kind of wanted to touch on, which was the army comp and the field of battle, the terrain changes.
Oh, yeah. Started with that.
Right? That might have been important, but that's fine. We got into our
game. We got excited.
Yeah. So the army comp stuff, you've got three different army compositions, which I like this a lot. I think this is a great change. So your open war is just how we've been playing. It's just the normal way that we've been playing, right? Where you just do what it says in the Grand Armies or the Army of Infamy, right? And then you have
mercenaries and allies. Like, yeah, it's just you don't have any additional rules beyond the rule book, the core book.
Correct. So then people were like, hey, having a 700 point dragon character is the worst thing in the world. Can we maybe like tone that down a little bit?
Negative play experience.
So then we go to the Grand Melee. Using a Grand Melee army rules, the focus shifts from mighty wizards, all conquering lords of war and gigantic units, towards the variety of warriors that fill the ranks of the old world's armies. So this is a typical army-ish thing where you have rank and flank, or, you know, that sort of thing, as well as a couple smatterings of big dudes, right? You're encouraged
some strong things that aren't completely overwhelming.
Right, exactly. It wants you to use armies of infamy, cavalry, chariots, all that sort of stuff, and not the big old monsters and characters and stuff. It literally says this in the book, rather than rely too heavily upon the might of monsters, characters, and excessively large units. So this is a complete point to... You're taking gigantic dragon lords. Knock it off. So the following restriction:
100 night goblins with poison arrows.
Why is that a problem, Dan? 100 night goblins is not a problem. To this end, the following restrictions apply when writing your muster list. You may not spend more than 25% of your army's total points value on a single character or unit. So typically 2,000 points. You cannot spend over 500 points on a single character or unit. Yes. All right. That's it. We didn't need any more.
Right. I like that change a lot because it tones down those huge dragon riding characters that would just win the battle on their own. 500 points for a single unit outside of that, I don't think is going to come into play as often.
I agree.
But still good. Like, you're not going to have a unit of 50 black orcs, you know?
Sure. Yep. And on top of that, hey, there's more. You can include as many level 1 and 2 wizards as you want to, but you're now limited to up to one level 3 wizard per 1,000 points and up to one level 4 wizard per 2,000 points. Fantastic change. Especially with the ways that they changed magic. You can only have two level 3 wizards at 2,000 points, right?
Maybe be wizard lizards.
They could be wizard lizards. There is a little note here. It says these do not apply to named characters, and under Grand Melee Army Comp rules, mercenaries are always permitted. Allied contingents are permitted at the organizer's discretion, right? So this is fantastic stuff.
Which I've seen the vast majority of tournaments don't allow allies, which is interesting.
I'm sure there's ways that you could just completely break armies and make them ridiculous with allies, but... I don't know. Just saying no, I don't want to deal with that seems like a hit in the gut to an entire part of the game. Like, Brooks loves allying Empire into his dwarf list.
Right. So he does it on purpose to make up for their weaknesses, right? He takes knights and wizards.
Yeah.
I think that's the kind of thing that most organizers are trying to stop because, I don't know. I don't think it's that big of a deal because it's like you have just core knights and maybe
one level three.
It's not bringing that army to a tier way above everybody else anyway.
Yep.
But I don't know. I think because a lot of people misunderstand the ally rules and how to build an allied force, that tournament organizers often just say, I'm not going to include it because I don't want to have to, you know, go through everybody's list with a fine tooth comb to make sure you did it right.
Yep. So the next one is combined arms, and this essentially just kind of takes the spam away. It's kind of the best way to put this. Your dwarf Air Force list is still semi-doable, but not really, right? Let me just go through it. As described on page 278 of the rulebook, the number of sum of available units is restricted, right? You see this of like 0 to 3 units of Jezails per 1,000 points or whatever it is, right? I just came up with something that doesn't actually exist. So under combined arms army rules, additional limits apply to any units and characters that are not otherwise restricted by the army comp list you're using. So this is something where if you're using a grand army, it says however many units of Ironbreakers you want, as opposed to X amount per 1,000 points or whatever it is, right? So this encourages players to create tactically diverse armies rather than relying too heavily on a single unit type or the other proliferation of a certain type of character, blah, 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 blah. So you have a 0 to 3 max to characters, 0 to 4 for core units, 0 to 3 of special, and 0 to 2 of rare or mercenary. And this is of the same type, as far as I'm aware, right?
Yeah, so like you can't take 6, you know, Night Goblin big bosses with just a great weapon to just...
Who does that?
Be the front rank of all your units, you know?
Nobody's ever done that, Dan.
Yeah, okay. So you could take up to 3 Night Goblin big bosses with great weapons. But then you could take, you know, however many like Night Goblin war bosses, because they are different characters, right? So it's just, like you said, it's to limit that spam. It's kind of the rule of three that a lot of tournaments have been implementing already, just a little bit more to it. Interesting to me that the core is 0 to 4. Typically you see core is allowed 0 to 6, especially given some armies have very few core options.
Sure.
Like Cathay, like, I mean, I guess you're probably not going to take more than 4 units of like Jade Infantry or whatever.
Yeah, right, right.
It's probably not a problem, but it's really more for the 0 to 3 special and 0 to 2 rare. So you're not, like you said, not spamming, you know, 10 gyrocopters. You could have 3 gyrocopters and 3 gyro bombers max using that.
Now, and there's an asterisk there. Because gyrocopters, you can take up to a unit of 6. Anyways, go on.
Well, so you can take up to that many units of them.
Yeah, you can take 18.
But so these are things that don't already have a limit. So it gives an example. It says, if you're fielding Empire of Man army using the Grand Army composition list, you can only include 0 to 1 unit of veteran state troopers per 1,000 points, but you can field as many units of Free Company militia as you wish, as core choices. When writing your muster list under combined arms rules, you can only include 0 to 4 units of Free Company. The limit on veteran state troops remains unaffected. Because that already has a limit built into the army, these rules don't apply. It's not like, oh, well, now I can take 0 to 4 veteran state troops. But no, you can still only take 1 per 1,000 points because that's what the army book says.
Now, something that I really like here is these numbers increase by 1 for every full 1,000 points above 2,000. So if you're going 3,000 points, you increase all these numbers. So it goes 0 to 4 characters, 0 to 5 core units, etc.
Makes
units sense. Taken as detachments do not count towards these limits, which I really like. Ooh. It's pretty cool.
I think
spam detachments then.
That makes a lot of sense because that would really potentially hurt like Empire specifically, where you have state troops. It's the same unit are the parent unit, the regimental unit, and the detachment. So it's like, well, I'd only be able to take 2 regimental units and 2 detachments. That, you know, if you're doing a heavy infantry, that might not work well at all. I can't remember if they can take 2 detachments like they used to be able to, but still, detachments not counting for that. Makes perfect sense. They shouldn't. Yep.
And it has the same note as this doesn't apply to named characters, et cetera, as it does for Grand Melee. I'm super happy with these new army comp rules, and I expect to see them everywhere.
Yeah.
Any event you go to, I expect to see these.
I think Grand Melee and Combined Arms together are going to be very, very standard. Yep. Again, things like Army Builder, you can already select that when you build an army.
Yep.
It gives you. You can do Open War, Grand Melee, Combined Arms, or Grand Melee and Combined Arms.
Yep.
Which is really nice.
I feel like that's going to absolutely be the standard, which I'm not upset about.
No, I think it's good for the game. I think it's healthy for the game.
Yep. Anything that makes the unnecessary spam go away, right?
I know there are plenty of people that are upset about that because like their particular like tournament winning build is no longer legal. And it's okay, so you got to figure out something else.
You have to actually play the game instead of spam things. I'm so sorry. Sorry, go on.
Right. I hate redundancy, even though I know I should do it more often in my list. I don't like building and painting the same unit multiple times. Like I couldn't imagine doing like, an Air Force of gyrocopters. I would just get bored of making the models.
I would love to do it if it had a blimp. If it had like a mainstay big unit in the center, and then I can have 2 bombers that flank it and then a bunch of gyrocopters hanging out. I think it would be really cool, but I can't because GW hates me personally.
Yeah, so what about the new terrain rules?
So the first and most simple method, shut up, is for the organizer and referee to set up terrain for the event, right? Which makes sense. They're going to do that anyways. But what do you do when you're playing at home, right? You do the placing terrain rules that they have here. How much terrain? If there's too little terrain, units struggle to maneuver. There's too much terrain, excuse me. If there's too little, it's going to be sparse and uninteresting. The best guide is to use one terrain feature per 12 inches of the longest table edge rounded up to the nearest 12. For example, if the longest edge is six feet, six features should suffice, which is cool. I think that makes sense.
Basically,
I'm going to do D6 plus 4.
I like the classic D6 plus 4, and like that used to be, people that aren't aware, that was like the main way to do it back in 8th edition.
Sure.
Was just D6 plus 4. We always rolled 10, it seemed like, which seemed
all the time.
Can be a lot of terrain, but like if you have smaller pieces in your collection, go ahead and do that. Or if you decide that's too much, just don't put that many pieces down.
Right. Yeah. You know? And again, this is a casual fun game that you're playing with your friends, right?
Right. I think six pieces on a standard 6x4 table is fine.
Yeah, that's perfectly average. Do that. The nice thing about these terrain rules is they actually give you things, but it says should. You know what I mean? It's not saying you need to do this, right? The best guide is to use one terrain feature, right? That's not what you need to do, but it is a guide. And then the next thing is the size of terrain, right? As a rule, terrain feature should be no less than 2 inches and no more than 12 inches at its widest point. If it's less than 2 inches across its widest point, it should be treated as a battlefield decoration rather than terrain, which I love that they say that.
Yeah.
This is just here to be pretty. You don't actually use it as a terrain piece. Love that. To determine how the size of terrain affects how much you should use, follow this guide, right? Between 2 inches to 8 inches widest point counts as one terrain feature. Between 8 inches and 12 inches of widest point, it can count as two terrain features. And more than 12 inches is widest point, it can count as three terrain features. Again, this is a should. You don't have to use this, but it makes sense.
Yeah. Right. So like you guys used that huge building I had printed and painted in your game yesterday.
Yeah.
It's definitely between 8 and 12. It might even be wider than 12. I'm not sure. It's widest point. That could count as two of the terrain features because it takes up such a big space.
Yep.
Makes sense.
I like this a lot for sure. Yeah. Those buildings are super dope, but if we do the classic D6 plus 4 and we want to make a city build, having them all count as two or three terrain features makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Dan, hit this placing terrain because it came up and I loved it and it was a lot of fun.
Oh, this is really, I like this a lot. It says, if at a match play event, the placement of the terrain is being done by players, they should use the following method. Determine how many to set up based on the size of the battlefield. Let's see, from the terrain available, the player should choose a number of features up to the maximum number of features needed. Once both players have chosen, the winner of a roll-off sets up the battlefield, placing chosen terrain features as they see fit. With all the terrain placed, the loser of the roll-off chooses D3 plus 1 terrain features and scatters them 2d6 inches.
I love it.
I love it. And if you roll a hit on the scatter die, it just doesn't move.
I love it so much.
This is so fun. We did this when I played Andy last week, I think it was. Mm-hmm. We did this and like some of the terrain scattered like right near each other. So like that part of the board got clustered. And then in the middle, it like really opened up the middle of the table. Even though I had placed it all just kind of like evenly about, and it was like, okay, so that's going to change how we're both playing this game. That's interesting.
Yep. This actually, so Andy set up the board for the game that we played, and one of the hills was one of the ones that I chose to scatter just because I thought it would be fun. And it ran into a building and it couldn't like move any farther. It just like, I rolled a 7 and it went 2 inches and it just couldn't move any farther. He was like, you want to just put the building on top of the hill? I was like, yeah, that sounds awesome.
So I was wondering when you guys pointed that out, like, oh, it's the hut for the old, you know, hermit wizard. I was like, I wonder if it's scattered there. And that's why they have a building on a hill.
It was so good. It stopped, like, because I think what happened was I scattered the building and it almost hit the hill. And then I rolled a 7 for the hill and it was going to run right into the building. And he was like, eh, pick it up. Just put it underneath it. I was like, that's genius.
Tiny stipulation, terrain features can be placed anywhere in the battlefield, but not within 12 of the center and not within 3 inches of another terrain feature. And these, again, these aren't should. So yeah. If you're using, you know, it's saying this is really, really it's saying you should do it this way, but it's like, this is actually a rule. The only exceptions to this are terrain features specified by the scenario and special features.
Yep.
And then it says, should the players agree or should the scenario require it, battlefield decorations can be placed in the same manner. To put whatever else you want on the table, make it look good.
Yeah. And that's the big thing, especially with these. When you go to a tournament, things are played in a completely different way than when you're just doing beer and pretzels at home. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But if you and your friends can't agree on terrain and all that sort of stuff, this is a really great guide. It's really fantastic, right? I don't know. I'm really happy with these changes. They were a lot of fun. Andy set up the board and I was like, I get to scatter terrain. I get to roll dice before the game starts. Let's do it.
I don't know why that's so fun. And then you have all the roll offs to like decide player side and everything. So it's not like somebody's getting screwed out when the terrain shifts in some weird way. It's like, well, if that's not advantageous to you, you might be able to just pick the other side then.
I love it.
No, I think this book was such a fantastic addition that kind of took us by surprise. There was like rumors of it before it came out, but it's like, I more ways to play. Okay. Yes, yeah, please. Man. You know, in eighth edition, we were stuck with the same six scenarios for the entirety of that game's life.
Oh my gosh. What, a decade? Like
official ones.
Like at least it was insane.
And it was like, and if we just said, if we roll the Watchtower, we're rolling it. Cause that scenario sucked.
Yeah.
So we really had five.
And we didn't even go over these scenarios. I mean, they're incredibly fantastic. So the first one is essentially just battle line. We'll just go over these real quick. First one's essentially battle line. The nice thing about it is you can choose any secondary objectives that you want to.
Yes, it's really it may neat. Include baggage train, special features, domination, strategic locations, 2, 3, or 4
yeah.
secondary. So let's just add whatever you want.
Yep. This is a normal Warhammer game that you can put secondary objectives in if you want to. And then scenario 2 is King of the Hill. It's literally a hill in the center of the board. And let's see.
Control if it for 100 VP.
Yeah. If the tables have been set up by the organizers, move straight to deployment. If the players are setting up terrain, place and scatter terrain as described. In either case, ensure a single large hill is placed in the center of the battlefield. And then it won't scatter, right? So
you got closer deployment, too.
Yeah, you're a little bit closer. It's only 20 inches. Apart. Yep,
and, as opposed but to you 24. Can't deploy within 8 inches of either short edge, so you're kind of squished together a little bit.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. Vanguard moves cannot be made in this scenario, which is kind of brutal. It's pretty nice.
It can't charge after vanguarding anymore, so whatever.
Yeah, that's kind of rough. But hey, my little three inch move is really nice when I vanguard with slayers. Right? Don't
you're vanguarding slayers?
Yeah, man, slayers are the best. Anyways, and then Dan did the drawn battle lines, which is really neat. It's just like it's a triangle. Your deployment zone's a triangle, yeah. But you're always 24 inches away, which is really great. And then you have reserves.
You just roll a D6 and a 1. Both players must choose a single unit from their army that's infantry or cavalry to be held in reserve, and then it can show up later. We didn't roll that, so it didn't happen.
Gosh, what was that stupid scenario in 8th edition where you had to roll per unit? It was awful.
God, that was such a pain.
That
one was not fun because it was always the things you needed out in the beginning were in reserve. Like, wow, all my war machines are in reserve. Great. So they don't get to shoot them for... Well, I think in that scenario, they moved on the first turn. So you only lost a turn with them, but still. First turn's usually one of the most important for war machines. Yeah, so that one's... This is just one unit gets put in reserve.
Yep. And that one must include the strategic locations 3, and it can include domination or baggage train, which is dope. The fourth scenario is the old Battle for the Pass, except it's using your long edges instead of the short edges for deployment.
It's Andy and I played last time.
Nice.
We did this one.
So it still has the bottleneck where the two short edges are impassable, right? And then you have secondary objectives where you have to choose strategic location 2, and it may include domination. And then this one I really want to try out is Chance Encounter because
yeah,
it just looks wild. It looks ridiculous. So there's four quarters and then an 18 inch circle in the center, right? So once the battlefield, blah, 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 the winner of a roll off chooses their deployment zone, A1, A2, B1, or B2, right? And that's each individual quarter. Mm-hmm. As shown on the map below, if the winner of the roll off selects a deployment zone marked A, then their opponent will use the opposite deployment zone, also marked A, and vice versa for B, right? Once deployment zones have been chosen, the winner of this roll-off deploys the first unit, and then you do alternate deployment. And this must include the special features secondary scenario, and it can choose domination and the baggage train as well. No special rules.
So the winner of the roll-off chooses a table quarter, essentially.
Yep. You deploy the opponent is
automatically in the opposite table quarter. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, this is
and the only 18-inch bubble in the middle. So you're it's interesting because you know it's a corner of a rectangle. Some of your stuff is really close, and some of it's going to be further away than usual.
Yep.
I want to try this one next time we play.
Yes, please. It looks like a lot of fun. This will be my artillery list. Just go in a back corner, a castle. And then the last one was the encirclement one where, it's your kind of refuse flank. So your deployment zone is really interesting. You're 24 inches apart in the middle. And then deployment zone A, their left flank is 12 inches away from you can't deploy within 12 inches of their left short edge. And deployment zone B, they can't deploy within their short edge, 12 inches within. Wow, words stopped were forming in my brain there.
Yeah, both sides you can't deploy within 12 inches of your short edge, so they're the opposite sides.
Yep,
which is pretty cool.
It didn't matter for me at all, but for Andy, it was a lot. Like he was squished because he had a lot of units playing orcs and goblins. Right.
Yeah, you are losing a sixth of your deployment zone in this scenario. Right. This one has strategic location 4.
Yep,
and can include baggage train and or special features.
Yep. I'm thoroughly pleased with this book. If you haven't bought it, please buy it. Whether you're going to run tournaments or events, it has so much good stuff in it that you can play in your nightly games, your Wednesday.
Like you're saying, I think a lot of this is going to become the standard way to play.
Yep.
Yep. You know, this is going to be like the standardized. You're doing Grand Army or what's it called? Grand Melee and
Combined
Arms.
Yeah.
GMCA.
GMCA. And it has rules for doubles events too, which I think we might look in at some point if like you and me want to team up against Alex and Andy or something like that.
Escalation events as well. They have rules for like tiebreakers and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Alliance of Dan, Warlords.
But Dan.
What?
It'll be Taylor and Andy versus Dan and Alex, and it'll be ta-da.
Ta-da. Shut up. That's stupid. I love you.
Anyways, there's so much good stuff in here. Please buy this book. I don't mean to shill GW, but this book is incredible. And really what it shows at the end of the day, what this shows is GW is listening to the way we wish to play this game, and they're actively keeping this game alive, right? Like they're actively pushing good updates I'm happy. I'm happy with the way this game is right now. And the future looks bright, in my humble opinion.
Totally
never goes to tournaments.
I wish. The last like three tournaments I planned on going to was just something happened like last minute or whatever, and was like
for real. Please, just once, please.
Right. I had a thing on my Facebook recently that was like, "Oh, this is from a year ago," and I'm like, "Thanks for reminding me. The last time I actually got to go to a tournament was a year ago." Just want to go to another one.
I just want to go to a tournament, please. Ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for being here. Thanks for loving me. This has been an absolutely fantastic episode. I'm so happy about what's going on here. Hey, if you're happy about this too, you should leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcast or Audible, or anywhere really, but Apple Podcast and Audible would be fantastic. It really helps
for us.
It's the best for us. It really helps people find the show. So we love doing this, and we would love more people to listen to us ramble about random nonsense. You want to find more of us, you can go to professionalcasual.com. All our socials, podcasts, blogs, merch, everything's over there. Speaking of blogs, Dan just did one about stupid stinky high elves. And there, what was that, a WFRP book?
Did.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was the new, it's called the Sea Wardens of Kothik. It was a kind of like a, basically like a GM guide to high elves in Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, except it focused on the kingdom of Kothik in Uthwan, which was a very interesting choice. I was shocked that that was the choice they made, just because it was like, surprised it wasn't one that's more well known, like Saffery or Trace or something like that. But they did a really nice job with it, where it's really fleshes out the area. They go to a ton of detail about the capital city, and like most of those source books, there's so much information you can use outside of that kingdom of elves.
Sure, fair enough.
Bunch of cool rules for intrigue in your adventures, which is. And charioteering. There's a chapter about charioteering.
What?
Advanced rules about chariots.
So Bruno can finally chariot something instead of crashing it.
That's very true.
But yeah, all our podcasts and our blogs and stuff, professionalcasual.com. If you want some merch, you can head over there. We've got some mugs. We got some shirts for this show specifically. Startplaying.games. You're going to want to look for Bad GM Dan. He's the best GM, actually. Don't listen to that name. And you can play games with Dan.
Just me?
Still? Live. Yeah. Playing games. It's a friggin' blast. Head over there. Start playing.
This morning.
I saw it happening. I almost jumped. Every time I see you in a room with somebody, I want to jump in and just be like, blah, 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 and then leave.
I know. I couldn't figure out exactly how to get it to like invite people specifically. I would make a link and it would just give them a link for the whole Discord instead. So I had to make it private, but whatever. We're playing WFRP. I got an Uber Zerg Adventure campaign going on, and my homebrew, it's called Cult Arcane, All Wizards Adventure going on. There's one space left for that currently every other Wednesday night that might get filled soon. But somebody was messaging me on there, but there is one space left for that.
Heck yeah.
And I have a couple one-shots scheduled that will go once I get enough people signed up. If you want to try out the new Old World RPG,
oh yeah,
homebrew one shot there of the dwarven expedition to try to retake Carrick Eight Peaks from the goblins.
Heck yeah, so many slayers.
Yeah,
so many slayers.
Half the pre-gens are slayers.
That's where my name Throwlash comes from on YouTube. Throwlash, if you want to hang out with me. Anyways, twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork. We've got, the power phase, which should be coming back here pretty soon. Dr. D's Disaster Zone. I don't think he's streaming today. We did it again, Dan.
No, we're pushing him out. I saw something, or he put in the Discord earlier that he couldn't do it today.
We're pushing him out. Got computer and table set up tomorrow. Should be possible. There we go. Anyways, and then Ben Solo Missions, he's on there every now and then. And then, check out For Do, the Friends of Recovery, dedicated to others for the Delaware, Otsego, and Shenango counties. Just helping people get back on their feet if you wanted to, help out a good cause. You head over to For Do. Anyways, folks, thanks so much for being here and listening to the show. Thanks for your time. You really make it. So we want to, hang out with you all and just chit-chat about one of our favorite games on the apps on the planet. On the absolute planet.
On the abs.
On the abs. I don't even know how many abs I've got. It might be 30. I'm not sure.
That's too many. You got a problem.
It's too many abs. Well, I mean, you worship enough.
Too much abs. Too much abs.
It's stupid. Oh my gosh.
We're just getting tired and delirious here.
Here it comes. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening and all that stuff. Dan, you got anything you want to say to the people?
Of course. May your dice always roll sixes, unless it's a leadership test.
Love y'all.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this show, check out all the other great shows here at the Professional Casual Network. Like what, Danny?
I'll tell you. On Mondays, we've got the Lost Omens podcast, our Pathfinder 2E actual play, hosted by me, playing through the Extinction Curse AP. Also, streaming on twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork at 7 p.m. Eastern time, you can check out, oh yeah, The Power Phase, our Marvel Crisis Protocol live battle report show. On Tuesdays, the podcast version of Wait, Did I Roll a Wild? Our Marvel Crisis Protocol povlog is available. On Wednesdays, alternating releases on the Patreon, we have Settling the Southlands, our homebrew Wolforp actual play, and The Slithering, a Pathfinder 2nd edition actual play. And on Thursdays, live at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork, we've got Wait, Did I Roll a Wild? Our Marvel Crisis Protocol povlog.
You can also check out back episodes of Elite Eight Showdown and the first 39 episodes of the Lost Omens podcast, the first 24 episodes of Settling the Southlands, and the first handful of episodes of The Slithering on the YouTube at youtube.com/theprofessionalcasual.